Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahulastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, I am Richard Herring, and this is my Leicester Square Theatre podcast you're about to listen to. It's good. I love it. It is free, and I'm very happy if you'd listened to it free. If you can't afford to pay for it, or if you don't want to pay for it because you hate paying for stuff, yeah, why should you? Smash the state! But if you'd like to give us some money so we can make more episodes of this and other exciting ideas, please go to gofasterstripe.com, where you can buy a series pass and watch all of these shows on video for just £15. That's 8 podcasts you can get for just £15. Or you could just buy one episode for £3.50. Anything you do to help us with that will be great, and it means we can carry on doing other stuff. Or go to gofasterstripe.com and just buy one of my DVDs, if you like. That would also be very helpful. But if you can't pay, if you don't want to pay, just tell your friends about the podcast. It's exciting. You won't believe who's the guest on this one, is it? It's amazing. Well, you probably know, because it probably said, it's Stephen Merchant. Oh, ruined it. Okay, anyway, here we go. Hope you enjoy it. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just completed a pilot script of Square Peg in a Round Hole. This shit writes its stuff. It's Richard Herring. Oh, you're much better than last week's audience. Welcome to Richard. It's only for me. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahulastapas. Oh, we had some fun this week. It's been amazing stuff. Was there anything I didn't do in the last one? Probably not. No! I'll talk to the audience just to get them back into. Got Eugene Toombs is back this week. He loves it. Fucking loves this show. See, if he can't sue us, he's come back. There's a woman with green hair. Imagine you could see this. Look at that. Unbelievable. It's like something from off of Star Trek. If only you'd been there in the first... I wanted to talk about that woman. There was a green woman when I was with Simon Pegg last week. It was at the end of the original Star Trek. It was like a green dancing woman. That could be you. What's your name? Helen. Hello, Helen. Nice to see you. And what do you, are you a dancer? You're a burlesque dancer. Well, it could be you.
Have you got any green body paint? It'll be a fantastic end to the series if you just came on at the end and did a sort of semi-nude, not fully nude, semi-nude dance, fully nude if you like. Is this your dad you're with here? What's your name, sir? Lee, are you in the burlesque? Are you a kind of bouncer to get rid of guys who come and go, you're a chauffeur? What do you do? You work for a shelving company. What is the best shelf to get, would you say? I've always wondered. The top shelf, that's good. There's a man. Yeah. That's the best one. Yeah. There's a man that bend over there in the audience. Well, lovely to meet you. It's Helen, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely. That's very, very glamorous. It's good. Well, I'll pay you. And then this man now, on the other hand, the glamour has left the building. What's your name? Do you work in IT? No, fucking let's sit and chat. Let's have a 5-minute chat about your interesting life. What is your name?
Martin.
Martin, that's a good name. Don't let anyone tell you any different. And what do you do for a living? Everyone's on tenterhooks.
I work in pensions.
You work in pensions. Do you think if a man is 46 years old and he hasn't got a pension, is there anything you can do for him? It's never too late to start. Don't fucking start. Look at him. It is too late. How much would it cost me with my lifestyle, which is basically eating chocolate and drinking, how much a week would I have to pay for a pension starting today? Come on, do your fucking job. I came out here to see some comedy, not organise a pension. I'll sign the... Get the paper out. I'll fucking sign it now. How much is it? How much is it? Just tell me how much it is.
£200
a month, fuck that. Well, I'll just keep the money. What I'm going to do, just sell my house. Yeah, fuck you. Fuck you, pensions. Sorry, it's taken a terrible turn. You're very welcome, Martin, to the show. I'm sure you're very good at pensions. And there's a beardy, and there's a kind of cool... bearded man here drinking a Foster's lager. That's how cool he is. I was trying to get sponsorship for the podcast. You don't work for Foster's, do you? Because I can't imagine you'd be drinking it otherwise. This is why I can't get sponsorship. What's your name?
Bevan.
Bevan?
Yeah.
This is getting fucking great now. I might just fucking flick off this... guest I've got. Yeah, flick up. I'm going to flick him off. And then talk to you. And what do you do for a living, Bevan?
I'm a lawyer.
You're a lawyer. Have I said anything so far in either this or the previous podcast that you think I could be sent to prison for?
I am taking notes.
You're taking notes. Lawyers, pensions. I like you, mate. Shelves. It's doing something. It's useful, isn't it? That's pension. You might not ever get to use it. You might die. Shelf. Going to use that. Can use that straight away, can't you? Exotic burlesque dancing. Use that straight away. Is it exotic? Was it fair to say exotic? Depends where you are. Oh, look at that face there. Okay, so, I'm sorry. It's getting close. It's near the end. It's near the end. Don't worry, sir. There's a man. There's a businessman in his suit and tie there. I'll just get you on before we go. Have you come from work, sir? And it's not you. It could have been you. But you're lucky you've escaped, it's him. What business are you working in, sir, before you...
IT.
Do you work in IT?
Yeah.
No, what do you do?
You work for the police,
fuck you. I have not... Ben Evans, who's 12, was in my dressing room earlier, but there was no point we were left alone in there. I did not. It's terrible working in entertainment now. And talking of paedophiles, will you please... Definite paedophiles. Will you please... won't find out for a few years, but... We all knew. He was in the toilet. He might not have come back again. I hope he's there. There's some movement. I'm hoping he's there. He's best known. The audience actually don't know who this is. Some of them don't know who it is, which is quite exciting. He's best known as Man with Broken Leg in Run, Fat Boy, Run. Yeah, the penny's dropped. He was a CTU staffer in 24. The like proper American proper TV. Will you please welcome, if he's there and if he has not left because of what I just said, Stephen Merchant, ladies and gentlemen. It's Stephen Merchant. Stephen Merchant.
I mean, look at him, though.
Yeah. Well, come on in.
Pull up a mic.
Hello. This is why your BBC One chat show only lasted one episode. Funnily enough, your first guest was Jimmy Savile, but we didn't realise. Definite paedophile as well. Like, there's not even a shadow of a doubt. It's funny with Jimmy Savile because I was in the States when the Jimmy Savile thing was happening here, and on the Daily Show, the Jon Stewart's Daily Show, they reported on the Jimmy Savile thing, and of course American audiences had never seen Jimmy Savile. They'd never seen a picture of him, so they just, so Jon Stewart, all he had to do was be like, this is a man that no one in England realised was a paedophile, and they just showed a picture, audience laughing for 5 minutes. Of course he was a kiddie fiddler. And why was he being given keys to, like, hospitals and prisons to just, like, run them? Like, what? But, like, even if he was legitimately not a kiddie, but why are you giving him keys to prisons and hospitals? He had his own office in a hospital. Jimmy, are you a doctor? No, I'm just a bloke with some jewellery. Have a key.
It was different times.
It was happier times. There were more innocent times. And what was amazing was the way that, like, suddenly every kind of 70s entertainer was talking about, like, so suddenly I saw a column and it was in The Sun and it just had Eric Bristow, I hated Rod Hull. And just, like, everyone suddenly mouthing off. When Paul Daniels is the only legitimate person, he's the most noble man of the 70s. Paul Daniels. Anyway, sorry, you were going to ask.
Yeah, well, we can just chat, it's fine. Do you remember much about Run, Fat Boy, Run? Which I would say is Simon Pegg's worst film.
I was Man with Broken Leg. I was Man with Broken Leg. Yeah. And they asked me if I would do it.
Yeah.
There was a little moment in time where I was going to be in every Pegg film with no lines right. As such. And I was in Hot Fuzz, like, looking for a swan. Man looking for a swan, Man with Broken Leg. And then it ran out of steam. They didn't want me anymore. There was a moment in time where it could have been a great thing, like an insider showbiz thing, and no.
Did it feel like it was going to be a hit, Run, Fat Boy, Run?
It was actually pretty successful, Run, Fat Boy, Run.
I know it was.
It was. No, it did all right, yeah. It was directed by Ross from Friends.
Oh, yes, it was. Was it?
Yeah. David Schwimmer. We didn't have to call you to say, call me, could you just call me Ross? Really weird.
And what about 24? That must have, that's a similar thing where you're in the background in 24. Is it what you mainly do? Is it because you wrote extras? People thinking, oh, you'll do it.
You'll be an extra. Yeah. No, I sort of got to know the guy that created 24, and I was visiting the set because I was a fan, and then he said, put on this shirt and tie and have this woman hand you a floppy disk. Those were the days. And that was what happened, yeah. And then I'm just sat there, and I imagined that I was setting up like a Jack Bauer Facebook page. That's like how I imagine, like just a blog. He didn't have time to write it himself, so it was just me writing Jack Bauer's blog. Yeah.
Oh, good. So that's it. That's all I've got.
Thanks, mate.
No, thanks for coming. It's Steve Merchant off of the telly. I can't believe you're here. I want to tell you about, before we get on into anything else, I think the first thing I have to... there's so much about you on Dirty Britcom Confessions.
Oh, yeah.
Which we've turned to a few times in this podcast.
Yeah.
These are... I mean, I think these are genuine things. I don't know if they're jokes. Simon was asking whether they were real, or maybe you were asking whether they were real or whether they were jokes. I think they're real fantasies.
This is real fantasies.
Of right. People. Here's one of yours. I want Stephen Merchant to fuck me with his size 14 feet.
That's really distressing. Beggars can't be choosers. What's the number? Is there a number on there?
There's no contact details. Do you have size 14 feet?
Size 14 feet, yeah.
I'm not going to ask you if you've seen a Bigfoot, because you'll just say, I've got big feet, and that'll be the end of that. Yeah, you were pretty, that's a shame for you, isn't it? You had that one ready.
I had that one primed.
Size 14. Is that worry you that person knows the exact size of your feet?
It's a bit weird, isn't it? Yeah. How do they know that?
Do they want the shoes on or off?
But I'm fucking them with the feet.
It might be a man, or it might be in a man's anus, I'm guessing.
Oh, why is it? Well, I'm just going to wank him off. Why have I got why have I suddenly got to stick my foot in his anus? That's just so. Do you go in sideways or and then turn?
I don't know.
Like a corkscrew effect?
I've got very tiny ladies-like feet.
That's
I've got
really
a size
distressing.
I've got half my seat, my feet.
Or maybe wear those like kind of like a like an old sort of oldie jester's shoe, with like a curl.
It might be just I want to fuck him with you know not
in with his feet,
with his size 40 feet.
Right.
Okay, that's one of them. I would like Stephen Merchant to fuck me methodically.
Oh yeah.
Against the stacks in a library.
Against the stacks in a library.
Yeah, methodically as well.
Yeah, this, you've got a very specific image now of this person who's sort of probably works in a library.
Yeah.
Someone who's a big fan of the Dewey Decimal System and just thinks we could fuck this up for an afternoon and then put it back in order again, obviously. I remember years ago, because that fantasy, the image that immediately came into my head is there's a scene in the film version of Atonement.
Right.
Where they're shagging in a library. I don't know whether that person had seen that. There's James McAvoy and Keira Knightley are getting it on quite heavily in a library. And I remember that image because that film came out like a couple of years ago, and I was watching that film with my parents kind of at Christmas time. We got the DVD of it. And even now, I still have that discomfort of when a sex scene comes on in a film. Like, I'm almost 40. My parents are in their mid-60s, and we're sat there watching it. And it's quite a nice film. It's quite sort of pastoral to start with. And then, like, about 20 minutes in, there's a letter being written on a typewriter, and the word cunt comes up. Like, just you're a cunt. And I remember thinking, like, I should start planning an escape now. Like, I didn't think it through, but I should have seen it coming. And suddenly, they go into the library, and I'm thinking, don't do it, Kira, don't. McAvoy, don't. And we're all sat there, it's like the whole family knows what's brewing. And we're just sat like that. And then she just starts, and they start kind of, and it's like, books are, like, rattling and that. And honestly, I have this thing where I have to make conversation that suggests I'm not interested in the sex in any way. So we're just watching this, and they're shagging the library, and I just went, "That's a lovely bookcase. What do you think that's made of? Because I need a bookcase. What is that? Like a wall? Is that a walnut?"
This is the guy to ask.
This is the guy you were. That's your. I bet that's your favourite scene, isn't it? That's your ultimate fantasy, that. You just put that on, look at that one.
He's just going, those shelves would never stay up. That is, those are fake shelves. Well, I think if you said, whoever fancy that was, with you saying, oh, look at that bookcase, they're going to be very happy that we're playing in the background. Do you want some more?
Sure, right, these are.
I want to give Stephen Merchant a back rub with a cone of ice cream. A lot of yours are very sweet, I have to say. It was hard to find. There's a lot of them. I want to give him a back rub with a cone of ice cream. I'm guessing ice cream down. Otherwise, it won't be so nice.
What do you mean ice cream? What does ice cream down mean?
Well, you know, rather than the cone going, if you give a back rub with the cone, that's just sort of semi-stabbing you with the.
Right.
So I'm guessing it's that. They've got the cone, and they've turned it upside down, and then using the cone to manipulate the ice cream. The danger, the ice cream will just fall out. But they've got the cone.
And when they're giving
kind of
me a back rub, am I stood up at this point? Have they climbed me like a tree?
I think someone else does want to climb you like a
there
tree.
We are. Of course she does. Of course.
I think you're lying down, because I think otherwise it would just, the ice cream would just plop off like a sort of.
Are you sure when it's a back rub with an ice cream, she's not having an ice cream? With one hand and just a slight massage with the other, but sort of focus more on the ice cream. Maybe the double cone.
Yeah. I think
for
it's
added
definitely
eroticism.
Because it says, I back rub with a cone of ice cream to watch him squirm and whine. I don't know if you
wouldn't
would.
Squirm, definitely
I'd just
squirm.
Go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I kind of find that kind of stuff just a bit embarrassing. I am ironically very vanilla in my sexual preferences.
Sure.
And I find just anything when it gets a little bit like, just think, oh.
But that's just such a, like, it's such a non-fantasy, that. Like, it's sort of, I'm annoyed that that's the best they could come up with. Because I'm filthy. I mean, I would go berserk on this person. Do you know what I mean? No, it would be an absolute disgrace, the kind of things. And that's the best that this him or her has come up with. It annoys me.
It's you face down as well. It's just your back.
I may as well be asleep.
And then they want to lick.
Oh, well, no, I'm interested.
lick the ice cream off. And then just a couple more, and then we'll move.
Yeah.
I don't know, the day I just sort of realised there are some people out there who just are getting off on me reading out sexual fantasies involving you. Disgusting people. My first sex dream started. My first sex dream starred Stephen Merchant with lady bits.
Wow, there's so many questions.
I just want to know who the other actors in the dream were, the non-stars.
I've only been around for a while. Like, I haven't been on TV very long. So, like, presumably this person's not very old. Like, because your first sexual, when is that? Like, I mean, you probably had it when you were, like, seven or something.
There was, I was very young.
Yeah,
I saw it in Shan Andalus, there was a lady with a breast being fondled when I was four. And I enjoyed that, the ants all over the guy's hands.
And I've just got lady bits.
Yeah.
Like a, I'm just holding some lady bits.
I think you've got this. You,
I've
with,
got me with
you with a beard, breasts,
right,
and a vagina.
But the penis and the vagina.
Yeah, and a slightly smaller anus than you have. A slightly daintier anus than you have at the moment. They don't specify that, but that's what I'm. I think you'd wreck it if it was you with breasts, a vagina, and a man's anus, big gaping man's anus. I think the anus has to be similarly reduced.
Who listens to this fucking podcast? I mean, with Peg, you had some civilised questions about his film career. We've talked about paedophiles, tiny anus, ain't I?
And I'll leave you this one. I'd leave my husband in a heartbeat if Stephen Merchant so much as glanced in my direction. That's a terrible...
Is that person here?
You have to be careful where you glance. You can be breaking up marriages. You're a kind of anti-marriage Medusa. You're that a divorce Medusa. That lawyer's suddenly fucking perked up now. He's got, you can break up marriages that easily. Good. So, you've done some podcasts before.
Not like this.
They haven't done all that well. So, were you annoyed when you did the podcast with... Ricky and Carl, and they were televised and turned into cartoons, that was then called the Ricky Gervais Show?
No, the podcasts were called the Ricky Gervais Show as well.
Yeah. But that's annoying, isn't it?
Well, not really, because it was a cunning marketing ploy, because people knew who he was and had no idea who either of us were, and so it seemed
it's
like...
not even the main one in it, I wouldn't say.
Well, the main one's obviously Carl, but we'd said there's the Carl Pilkington Show... before Carl was known. Who's tuning into that? The Carl Pilkington Show. Amazing. I've never heard of it.
So very good, though.
Thank you.
I'd never heard a podcast before I started doing podcasts.
I can tell.
Yeah. but I've seen those on TV. We enjoy those. Are you going to do some more of those?
No.
It's easy. You don't even have to do anything. They're all being recorded.
Too expensive to make.
You have to get some dude to draw things.
Exactly. It takes forever.
Can't take long.
It takes forever, yeah. You did a good job. You did a great job.
Just choose the same piece of picture all over and over again, isn't it? It's like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon where the backgrounds go in and it's a
tree.
It's
just the sort of effort you put into things, isn't it? Just do the same thing again and again.
25 years.
Got so far.
25 years and the cock jokes are still working. We'll get on to that later. The people are fucking sitting on the edge of their seats waiting for the answer to that one. Is it possible? Who knows? Let's talk about your latest TV show.
All
That's
right.
what you've seen. There you go. Now you're happy. Are you fucking happy now, Merchant? Which is called Hello Ladies.
That's right.
And is on HBO and Sky Atlantic.
Yeah.
If you're in the UK, which, let's face it, you are.
Yep.
It's quite interesting because I saw this... You came back to start doing stand-up a few years ago.
Yes, and you were very supportive of that, and I appreciate it. And you gave me lots of gigs, and you were very...
Yeah, but it was very exciting to see you back doing stand-up. A lot of this stuff then became the show, Hello Ladies, right, that you were working on, and then that's turned into an HBO sitcom.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Well, I'd done stand-up years before. I'd done stand-up, like, in the kind of when I first left university. And then, as you know, it's hard and you're slogging up and down the motorway and you're travelling around all the time. And then when the office and things happened, there was no reason to carry on. In my mind, it didn't seem like sensible to carry on. And I never really enjoyed it particularly. I was sort of doing it because my heroes were stand-ups as opposed to sort of doing it because it was, in my blood. Yeah. And so I just stopped. And then a couple of years ago, I thought, I don't know, it felt like I sort of had unfinished business with stand-up, and obviously you can make silly money from it and put a DVD out and stuff, and so still available.
I make these myself. No, with sure. that fucking Welsh bloke you met.
It just seemed like it was something worth going back into and dabbling with.
Yeah.
And my old act, I tried doing it when I came out. My old act that I did before I was on TV and stuff was where I was like a comedian who thought I would come on as myself, but no one knew who I was, and I would come on and be angry that they didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
And the idea was that I was like, I thought I was a real big shot, specifically just outside Bristol, and like within the kind of 10-mile radius of Bristol, I was huge. But obviously, wherever I played, unless I was 10 miles out of Bristol, no one knew who I was. And so I would get angry. I'd come on and be like, why are you giving me attitude? And so I'd go off. And it was one of those sort of anti-comedy things where I never got to the act. I keep promising an act that never shows up. And I keep promising this Pringles joke. I'm going to do a joke there about Pringles. It'll blow your mind. It'll blow your fucking mind, all right? And then I would sort of get to the end, like 20 minutes, and be really angry and sort of begrudgingly do the joke about Pringles, which was... the slogan for Pringles is "Once you pop, you can't stop." But if that's the case, why have they got a resealable lid? So I'd get that kind of response, and then I'd go, oh, fuck this shit. And then I would leave, angry. I'd say, I'm going to leave now, clap, and I'm going to walk off the stage, and I would just put the microphone back and just like, I'm going to leave. And I'd walk off the stage and then leave it, and they would clap, and it would sort of go quiet. And then I would just walk back out again and just go, you can't get out that way. It was great. It was the most fun I've ever had on the stage, and just see and then just have to make my way through the audience and make it really painful. And then I tried doing that once I'd been on TV, and they were like, "Why are you being so mean? We know who you are." So I had to change it all from scratch. Yeah.
What is best, Wookiee Hole or Cheddar Caves?
Well, I've never been to Cheddar Caves.
You've never been to Cheddar Caves?
And the problem with Wookiee Hole is that I went there on a school trip, but every school trip, everything that I saw on a school trip is coloured by the fact that all the people that I was on a school trip with hated everything. You know what I mean? So, like, Wookiee Hole, shit, this is shit. This is shit. And then you go and, like, see Macbeth. This is shit. This is bullshit. And so, like, there's nothing I enjoyed when I was a kid because you weren't allowed to ever enjoy something. And at Wookiee Hole, isn't there, like, I'm sure there's a thing that you can go in a room where a woman shows you how to make paper.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's what it's got over Cheddar. Cheddar doesn't have
right.
that.
And I remember thinking that was really interesting, and obviously everyone thought, this is shit. Who knows? It's just paper, and it's shit. And so I had to suppress the fact that I liked learning at school. Like, I could never tell anyone. It's like the Battle of the Somme when you're at school. Like, in my school anyway, you just had to keep running, and your friends were getting knocked down, bullied, tortured, and you just had to keep running and pretend you didn't know. You could never agree that you liked anything or that this might be useful one day. So that's...
I knew I'd been to Vienna before, but I could remember nothing about it. So I went back to my year-off diary that I'd kept, and it was all about going to Vienna, going, it was all a bit shit. And yeah. I didn't know there was nothing. And then I went to Salzburg. I saw the birthplace of Mozart. It was rubbish.
Exactly, yeah.
It's just like dismissing. Yeah. These 18-year-old walk around. Go, we talked to this guy in the ethos. He was boring. Dismissing everything.
But like, what is impressive to teenagers? Is there anything? I'm terrified of teenagers because you can't reason with them. They're like zombies or like Muslim fundamentalists. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't. They have no reason. You can't go. No, wait. Listen, this is beautiful. Beautiful. You beat him. Just beat the guy to death. I was driving back to my house, and I was just driving. I saw my garage. I live in North London. It's not an unpleasant area. But I was driving in. This wasn't very long ago. And just a kind of gang of ne'er-do-wells were just like in the street, just lingering in the street. And I sort of slowed down. And they kind of looked at me through the glass, just like, this is our territory, West Hampstead. Yeah. And then they separated to, like, graciously let me through. And then I pulled up outside my garage, and I looked back, and they were sort of looking at me, and they didn't know who I was. They recognised me. They just were like... And then I had to get out to unlock the garage door, and they started running towards me, just like zombies. It was terrifying. And I was like, just trying to get the door up. And I got in, and I slammed it closed as they came out. They were like hammering on the outside, like in a horror film, making noises, drinking beer. And I just cowered in my garage. But not because I couldn't. There was an exit. I could go up to the sort of to the house through a back exit. I just was cowering because my car that I had, when you press the lock, it honks the horn. And I just didn't want to give them the satisfaction of honking the horn, because I knew they'd go like, oh, horn or something. I just didn't want, like, I was terrified of being bullied through a door. So I just cowered for 45 minutes until they ebbed away. Oh, I'm so pathetic.
I must take you to Cheddar Caves if you want to come sometime. It's really good.
Yeah, you'll like it.
You can stay at my mum and dad's. I don't even have to come. They'll put you up. They're nice.
And what's at Cheddar Caves if there's not? There's no making paper.
We don't need paper because we've got like good caves and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, there is cheese, and that's made in one place. It's not really ever made in Cheddar. There's one place up the gorge that makes it though. It's more of a tourist thing. We don't take it that. The locals don't take it that seriously. There's a couple of caves.
These used to be our caves. All the tourists came, ruined our caves.
Jacob's Ladder. You go up Jacob's Ladder, which is like some steps. And then there's a tower you can look at.
This is the British tourist attraction, isn't it? Like, this sums up the British tourist attraction is a cave and a ladder. You know, there's Disneyland in America. We've got a cave. And then my sister sent me a leaflet for Diggerland. It's just some diggers in a field. Yeah, there are some big Diggerland fans.
There's a barometer world in Dorset. I've only got the late leaflet for it. I've never been in it. It says parking for up to 3 cars. But that's always been enough. I've never needed more.
Barometer world. A world. I mean, it's a grand... I mean, at best, barometer shed, you'd imagine.
Some barometers.
Yeah, some barometers.
4 barometers. 4 similar barometers. That's what it should be called.
Wow.
Oh, good. I love the West Country. I'm going to ask you... I forgot, so I apologise, Ben Evans. I did not have your... question for Simon Pegg in the first half. I hadn't seen it, so I can't ask
answer.
Simon Pegg. How do you think Simon Pegg was chosen to play the amazing role of Thompson in the new Tintin film?
Just knew the people involved.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
His question.
That probably is the answer. I think that is the answer.
I think Steven Spielberg was involved.
There you are. Probably met him at a party or something.
Yeah. Think,
That's how it happens. That's how it happens.
Ben Evans asks, he's here in the audience tonight, slightly cowering from the memories of what happened to him. I've never revealed it, not for like 30 years.
Why do they keep it shtum for so long, these victims? Why don't they just come out with it straight away?
There's a backlog, they'd say, but then they go, sorry, we're dealing with 30 years
ago. Oh, that's what it is, right.
We'll get you in good time.
Good time.
Ben Evans asks, and I love this because I've not seen this and I wouldn't have been able to ask you this, but I would have liked to ask you this, and I'm going to read it in the tone of voice that I think it should be read in. Are you proud to be the voice everyone knows on the adverts for Barclays and Waterstones? Are you proud of that? Are you proud of yourself? That's what Ben Evans, not me, it's Ben Evans' question.
Thank you, Ben, yeah.
Are you proud of that?
Bloody Paxman in the audience. Well, I haven't done either of those for many, many years. Well, maybe not many years, but certainly, well, yeah,
well,
years.
Well, you're not proud of The Office. You didn't do The Office for a long time. You're not saying you're not proud of The Office? Still be proud of something amazing you did 4 or 5 years ago.
The thing with the Barclays adverts is that I sort of had this rather naive thing, because my first bank account was with Barclays, and they gave me this like quite nice plastic folder. I mean, then, not when I did the voiceovers. That's not what swung it for me. We can't afford money, but look at this. There's a slot for your checkbook. And so I had this kind of rather cosy image of it, you know, like as a kind of high street this high street thing where you'd go and they'd give you, you know, like, and when I was growing up, like, there was the one with the little pigs they would give you, and so I think I just naively was like blindly went into it thinking, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just like a high street thing, like, you know, curries or whatever.
I think Ben likes it. I think he's saying he's proud. I think he should be proud. But I was actually, when you'd stopped doing it, I was asked if I would go and audition to do it. Yeah. I just said no.
Yeah, but you don't realise that, you know, as far as you know, I took my parents on a beautiful cruise around the world with the money from that ad.
You could do that with the money you got from The Office.
I'd already taken them on a wonderful transatlantic cruise. I was going the other way round this time, which is what they'd always wanted.
So we will...
Brackets, I've never taken them on a cruise.
I could have done, and I might still do. Talking of The Office... It may be your most famous thing after the Run, Fat Boy, Run thing. What I think the genius of The Office was that you put a Tim from The Office in it. I think that was... You were probably the first people to think of doing that. And a lot of people have then subsequently copied that idea.
Sure.
But you were the first... What gave you the idea to put a Tim from The Office in The Office?
Well... We'd created a show with an office in it and a character of Tim, and we needed someone to fill that role.
Right.
And the obvious choice was Tim from The Office. So we popped him in there.
Could have been more successful, couldn't it, that show, if you'd put a Shrek in it. Ever get tired of your catchphrases? I really want to remake everything that Tim from The Office has done subsequently, but he is Tim from The Office in it. Would you have any problem if I've had to go to Goodnight Sweetheart and ask him if I can do stuff for Goodnight Sweetheart? Would you have any problem, and I have to get the permission of the people who put Sherlock together first, if I redid Sherlock exactly the same as it was, except that Tim from The Office is Tim from The Office?
I think it'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love that. Yeah.
Be good.
Yeah.
Good. So you have, that is a. There's a lawyer in the audience. Is that a binding contract? He's not sure. Lawyers don't like to just go, yeah, that's okay, because they don't get any money then. So they'll make us sign loads of different contracts for it.
I don't think my giving the thumbs up is going to be the thing that swings it for you, though. You may have other problems.
Yeah.
Well,
it's the start. It's just
see.
The starting point of doing it. Yeah. What I'm quite interested in about The Office is in its. It kind of was quite a slow burner.
Right.
And I'd heard that the BBC Two executives did not really like it. Is that, to begin with, the controller of BBC Two? This is a story I heard, and I don't like her because she cancelled our show. So this is.
Oh, right, okay.
I'll lay that out first of all. But I'd heard she just thought, this is, I don't get it, it's not funny. And then it started getting really good reviews and stuff, and then she went, look at us, we invented The Office. Would you say that was true?
In all honesty, I don't. Know if that's true, because they kept us insulated from the opinions of the executives at the BBC. We never really found out. The only thing that leaked out was that they had tested it in front of audiences and it had got the lowest score ever. The only thing that had got a lower score was women's bowls. Which I didn't even know they televised, but apparently they did.
But men's bowls was a
men's bowls was a smash. That was a smash. That used to be in the place of Strictly Come Dancing, if you remember. So I don't know if she liked it or not.
Yeah.
But I cannot use information I have to fuel your hatred.
But I think it's quite interesting because in fact, this happened to a lot of big shows that become very successful. Only Fools and Horses. Mm-hmm. They showed it for a series.
Right.
It wasn't very successful. No one saw it. No one really reviewed it. Then something like the Olympics was cancelled or whatever. They couldn't show the Olympics.
It's that famous 1982 Olympics. They cancelled. They cancelled that year.
There was an alien invasion or something. Oh no, that was me. There was me. But they showed it again, and then it was massive success. Which sort of
That's very right. And I think that happens a lot with things. And I think, you know, unfortunately now you don't get the time to let things breathe in that way. But yeah, I mean, but also I think with sitcoms, you know, you need the reason that they work is because people get to know the world and the characters, and then the jokes start to make more sense once you sort of understand who these people are and what makes them tick and everything. And you know, it's a bit like sort of, I don't know, you know, if you judge it on a pilot episode, it's like judging a book literally on the first chapter, or judging a film on like the first 30 minutes. Like, I mean, I know we do that, but you know, like, you'd be quite, there's a number of films that wouldn't make a lot of sense if you switched them off, you know, before they get going.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very unfortunate that a lot of things don't get that chance anymore, you know, and we certainly wouldn't have survived.
I think nearly everything that I really love, the first time I saw it, I really didn't like it at all.
Right.
And I think even The Office might be included in that.
Yeah.
But I really do. I mean, I actually really love the American version of it, I think, more than the, at least sort of the first four or five series of it. Then it sort of goes a little bit awry, I think.
Right.
But they, you know, it's quite, it's such an amazing, interesting idea, and I think they take it to another level in the,
absolutely,
in terms of doing so many episodes, is what I mean. I think,
yeah,
you know, I think they kind of concentrate on the peripheral characters a bit more, don't they? I mean, how much did you have to do with the American version of it now that I've just said the last three series of it were shit?
Well, I wasn't involved heavily,
no.
You know, but I mean, I think for me, like, I'd seen a lot of kind of other shows that they tried to transfer in the past, and they hadn't been successful. And I think part of that reason was that the original creators from England had tried to do the American version.
Yeah.
And that seemed foolish to me, because I'd never worked in an American office. And we think they're kind of similar, but actually there's so many things that are... Like, that, I didn't realise that in America they don't have pub quizzes.
Right.
Like, a pub quiz is such a British thing. You know, they don't have that in France or anywhere else. And so it's sort of odd that, you know, things like that you would just assume, you know, are kind of universal. That's not the sole reason the show was a success in America, because they removed the pub quiz episode. But you know what I mean? Like, it seemed important to kind of let American people do a version of it with American sensibilities, which is what we did. So I sort of take pride in Ricky and I not being involved.
Yeah.
That's by graciously not doing anything and just taking their money, we helped the show succeed.
But I think it's a rare case. It's nearly always that is a disaster when people take, you know, either way. The only one that really worked was Who's the Boss becoming... I can't remember what it was called now, damn. It would have been a brilliant reference that one person got. Do you remember Who's the Boss with Tony Danza?
No.
Yeah, so one person gets it.
Okay.
And then that became... Then they did it with one of the McCann brothers. It was called Home to Root. What? What?
The Upper Hand.
The Upper Hand. Do you remember The Upper Hand?
Nope.
That's why that is a successful piece of observational comedy. I think we need an emergency question. It's the one that the audience are burning to hear the answer to.
All right.
Stephen Merchant from Off of the Office. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock? I did a big serious bit in the middle there about The Office for you.
Yeah.
And now you have to do... People will get edgy if there's not cock stuff in there. Okay.
I have never attempted to suck my own penis. No. However...
Oh.
I'm quite nervous around my penis. I don't like getting involved down there. I'll tell you why. Because I don't know if it's big or... I don't know what size it is in relation to what size it should be.
Right.
I'm anxious about it, because I'm very tall. You would assume it should be large.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's like... I can't tell when I look. It seems smaller than it should, but I don't know if that's just because, like, things are just, like, weird in the mirror, or if you're looking down at it, whether it...
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't really know. I don't want to type in what size should a penis be. If you're 6'7", that seems kind of a strange question to ask. So I generally uncomfortable about... Like, once I remember at university... I was drunk and I was in the toilets in the student union, and my friend was in there, and I sort of drunkenly went and like tried to pee on his shoes, and he went, your penis is really small, and that freaked me out for years. That, like, I've never really recovered from that. But then subsequently, on occasions when people have seen it, doctors, nurses, prostitutes, no one's ever laughed openly, or like maybe they've written about it on blogs or in diaries or on that website. But I don't know what its status currently is. So the idea of trying to suck it and then finding out like that everyone else can suck their cocks would be really distressing to me. But years ago, one of the things before The Office, I went to America to interview porn stars, and I interviewed Ron Jeremy. And Ron Jeremy can apparently, that was his thing. I never saw one of his films, but apparently he can suck his own penis.
Yes.
Are you aware of this?
I've heard that. I've not seen it either.
Yeah.
I have seen pictures of other people doing it.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen pictures.
Did you see this when you were younger, or did you,
No, I've done. I'll, if you're worried about the size of your penis, I'll give you a copy of my book, Talking Cock.
Right.
And then you can.
And this
find
is
out
all discussed in there,
oh,
is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite.
He says, "Oh yeah, yeah. Like,
serious,
you should, why don't you know this? Everyone knows
serious
this."
Serious treatise on the subject of the penis. You know, I find by approaching it with humour, we get to interesting places. See, who would have thought that this question would made you open up about your penis size?
Yeah.
This is so going to be on the front page of the Daily Mirror.
But, yeah. But I, it's like comedian worried if he's not great in bed. Shocker. Lanky, goggly-eyed merchant, 6'7".
If you want to go and measure it now and come back and whisper in my ear what, how big it is, I'll tell you if that is normal or whether
Well, I don't know how big it is because I've never measured
it. Measure it. Get a ruler. Why do you think they're 12
inches
long?
Well, backstage, you just keep a ruler and your little creepy notebook. That's all you've got. That's all you've got back there.
What is
that on the front? It's like some kind of... Is that Hitler's diary? What is that?
Slytherin is a Slytherin notebook. Geez. If you like, you can measure... We can use
measure
my...
it together. Measure it together.
I know how long mine is, so we can measure.
And do you measure them when it's erect, or is it a flaccid?
Erect.
But how, fully erect?
Yeah. if you can get fully erect. Fully erect! I have to be as full as it, as full as bloody.
You need
as
a full Jacob's ladder. And then you... Oh, disrespecting
just, all I really want to do is just put my penis against your penis. Just touch against this. This will be on the site.
Is yours quite a...
Well, you know, because the advantage I have over you for once in my life is that I'm quite a short guy.
Right.
And quite a chunky guy.
So, you know, this is the thing. You only need a short... You need a relatively short penis and it'll look great.
Exactly.
So you're a tall man like that... You need a super long penis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is unfair.
Yeah, and you obviously haven't got that.
There you are. There you are. I love how excited you are about that. Like you've won in some weird competition in your mind.
Yeah, you might have your own show on HBO.
Yeah.
And all that come. I've got probably a slightly thicker penis.
I'll tell
penis
you, mate,
I
haven't had any complaints so far to my face.
I genuinely once had, and I've done this as a routine, but I was once when I was a single man before I met my beautiful wife, I was having sex with a woman I'd just recently met, and she was giving me a fellatio.
Oh, that's nice.
And I thought so. I'd only just met her, we'd become very good friends very quickly.
Yeah.
And
this is much larger than the Steve Merchant's.
And I said to her, yeah, that's right. And I mean, but the reason I didn't do this as a routine for ages because I was embarrassed about this bit. I said to her, yeah, that's right, suck my big cock. And she, this is embarrassing, but that's, you say those things when you're having sex with someone. And then she broke off from what she was doing with my penis in her hand, looked up at me and said, well, average size cock. And I've got a big cock, that's what's...
Yeah.
So
we've understood.
She just had sex with, that's the thing, she'd had sex with like 10 men with 12, 14 inch cocks. From her perspective, my actually above average size penis would seem.
You've got to let this go, Richard. You've got to let it go, mate.
Is it the mean or the median she's talking about?
Richard, you've got a successful podcast. Let it go. You've won, mate. You
so
beat me.
What about Ron size? Jeremy? You were saying about Ron G. You've seen Ron Jeremy do it. Is that the...
No, I didn't see him do it. He told me that he could do it.
No,
I didn't.
No, did
well,
he say
I remember what
did
happened.
Did he sidle up to go, I can suck my By the way,
no, I was interviewing porn stars for this. Sky TV got hold of some porn outtakes. Some porn bloopers. Which was just like naked people coming, you know, going into rooms and going, oh, the door won't open. Just naked, fully naked. That was all they had. And I've come too soon. Oh. Anyway, so Sky TV thought we can get a couple of TV shows out of this. So they made a show called Porn Crackers. And they thought, who do we need to do some field reports in LA? Merchant.
Yeah.
So they got me in, and I flew to LA, and I interviewed Ron Jeremy, and I interviewed a girl called Devon, who, and I remember making a joke about. I remember the idea was we were watching one of her films, which was her featured in having a sex scene. I was sat next to this girl Devon, and I said, when I was growing up, I spent a lot of time in Devon. I imagine there's a lot of guys around here who can say the same thing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Never. She'd never even heard that it was a place in England. She had no idea. And then the really weird thing was we went to the suburbs of LA, and we were interviewing this couple, and they had this quite nice little sort of 3-bedroom house. It looked like a Barrett home kind of house, but it had cameras in all the rooms in different places. And so I was talking to this woman, I was interviewing this woman next to, and I was sat next to her, and she was, every night, she's like a porn star, and she was married to this guy, but he was like a former NASA scientist. I don't know how they'd met. That was the one question I didn't ask. I mean, I don't know where they're mingling. And every night at 7 o'clock, she would go on the webcam, and she would, I'm doing this because this is me typing on the computer, and she would talk to her fans, and they would ask questions. And so I was sat next to her, and they were filming me and my team, and this camera was on me. And these people started insulting me on the thing, like, who's this, like, goggly-eyed weirdo? And she was like, oh, it's a British journalist. And they were like, journalist? That was a bit much. But and they were like, I don't want to see you. I paid for you. Who's this loser? Fucking loser. So I got really angry, and I started writing back, who's the loser? I'm here with the girl that you're paying money to look at. You're sat home with your trousers around your ankles. They started abusing me back. And while I'm typing this in, this her husband comes down and he just starts fondling her boobs, right? And it's weird, and they just start kind of kissing and they're fondling and that, and I'm just sort of like that. And they go upstairs, and me and my camera team are like, what do we do now? This is a bit strange. And then the husband appears from upstairs. He just appears from, like, sort of on the landing and just goes, come on up! I mean, like, you don't want to be rude, do you? You don't want to be polite around porn stars. So we went up there, and she was on the bed going berserk with herself, doing, you know, ugh. And he was filming it, and it was streaming live on the web, right? And he's filming it like that, and she's, ugh. And we're just looking a bit uncomfortable, you know, just sort of admiring the wallpaper. Like, because you don't want to look directly at it, because, you know, that'd be rude.
Were any bookcases in there?
lovely bookcases. I wish I hadn't brought my parents with me. That was just uncomfortable. Anyway, so he says, I'm going to join in. So he gives me the camera. He goes, film it. And he jumps on the bed and starts doing her. And now I'm just standing with this camera. I've just become a pornographer. I'm now just making porn. And I remember thinking that all those guys that had been insulting me are watching this live. So I just pointed the camera at the wall. So they're just, all they can hear is like, just distant sounds of the grinding. And I presume they, I don't know whether they logged off. Is that a euphemism? I don't know. But, yeah, that was my experience of...
You started describing what is happening.
Yes, the audiobook version, yeah.
But you mustn't judge yourself. I mean, though he is a NASA scientist rather than the porn star.
Yeah.
Porn stars generally have larger penises than the average man.
Can I just point out that a lot of this is jokes. I know. Don't worry too much about what's going on. I'm using you
as a conduit for the many small penis men.
If there's any ladies out there, don't worry, all right? We could take care of business, all right? He could take care of business and I could film it. I'm an expert.
Now, in your show, Hello Ladies, and your stand-up show, Hello Ladies, same title. I just noticed. I love being incompetent. It's a joke. It's a very honed character. Should I ask a question? You're incompetent with women and that no women like you. Your character is Stuart Herring or something he's called. Stuart. It's something like Stuart Pritchard.
Right.
I was thinking it's like Stuart and Richard. I don't know if you blamed it. Done it on Lee and Herring. I've turned into my dad. My wife's laughing because she knows it's true. That can't be true in real life, though. You must be very successful with women in real life.
Absolute player.
You're an absolute player.
Absolute fucking
player. It's what I used to do. It's a very good technique. Pretend you're no good. Pretend you have an average-sized penis. That's quite a hard thing to do. Pretend you're no good, and then girls like you. You're a millionaire.
Yeah.
Film star. You're in the Tooth Fairy.
Film star.
You're in the Tooth Fairy.
Sure. Because that turns the ladies on. You played a fairy?
It's good. I saw that. Yeah. You and that wrestler guy.
Yeah. He's not a wrestler guy. He's The Rock. You put him in any film, it makes a fortune, that guy. Fast and the Furious, not making any money. Stick The Rock in. Boom. Most successful film in the last couple of years.
Julie Andrews is in it.
Yes. Do you know how much money The Sound of Music made?
Lots.
Yeah, in 1966.
But, I bet that you're just getting loads of girls. That's what I'm saying.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not as incompetent as the character or my stand-up. No, but I'm not. I'm not a Lothario. I try to be. I like to be.
Yeah. It's the ideal age to be a Lothario. I enjoyed that time. Now I've been with the same person for 6 years.
Well, you're married. That's your problem.
Yeah,
now. That's where you're going wrong.
But luckily, I chose the right. You've got to get out of that at about 40, 41, because it all stops working.
Yeah.
And you get unattractive. My wife's very good looking.
Sure.
And I trapped her and got her just at the right moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just when you're 40 and now she's stuck, she can't get out of it. There's no way out.
There's no way out.
And
yeah.
I can't
off
offer
the pit.
Yeah. So that's what you've got to do. So you've got a couple of years of putting about. That's my advice to you.
Thank you. That's very generous of you. Thank you. Yeah.
The audience don't like to think of you as a sexual being.
No,
that's
no,
why,
I know. No,
that's
no one
why
does.
There's this uncomfortable silence. Not because,
but the problem,
I've just been incompetent.
What's happened is that I've cultivated this image of being a loser with women so much that it is now impacting on my real life. Because now, if I actually got to a woman, she's like, oh, no, it's weird. You know what I mean? Because I've created this illusion that I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Whereas, oh yeah. I mean, I don't know why I did that. What's that? I mean.
That's wiping the ice cream off your pack.
Yeah. Okay. That's just like, this makes me look like, what's his name from Wallace and Gromit doing that?
Oh, and I was in, you did the Steve show on Six Music, but that started in Radio Warwick when you were a student, presumably.
Right, yes.
And you suckled milk from a cow's udder.
No.
You did.
Oh.
It says
someone else
Wikipedia.
Asked me this recently because of the because of their thorough research on Wikipedia. No, what happened was
it's sourced and everything. Its citation is not needed.
Sure,
it goes to a link which explains what that was about. I checked it thoroughly.
Okay,
and you did do it. I've sucked milk. I'll tell you, so you feel comfortable. I've drunk milk out of a goat's teat directly.
Okay. We've already established your approval. All right, that's fine. I have never suckled cow's teats. This is what happened. Ricky, when we used to do radio, used to make jokes that his friend Robin Ince, who you probably know and has done stand-up comedy for years, and who was excellent, he used to make jokes that Robin had suckled milk from teats of animals for some Ricky reason. Somehow, this has become, I did it on my student radio. That's the reality.
On Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Well, attempt to give away an Aerosmith album to people on a toilet?
That sounds more like the sort of thing you would have done, yes. Yeah. That kind of crazy antic.
Did you do a sketch about At Home with Fred and Rose West?
Yes. All right, we were students! I didn't realise it was distasteful. I was trying to be irreverent, but it
was before
horrible.
It had come out what they were doing.
Yeah. We just had insider information because we were from the West Country.
You wonder why not all the team were coming back from the visits.
Yeah.
That's right, I went there. You were in Blockbusters. I've seen you on Blockbusters.
Do you mean I was in Blockbusters? You saw me in the video store Blockbusters. I was on Blockbusters.
On 1997,
yes.
But not with Bob Holmes.
No, it was a version where they brought it back with Bob
Holmes.
You were
quite old. Why were you on It's for Children? You're like 23 or something.
Well, what had happened was my friend had been on it years before when it was students, and he said it was the best time of his life, and he had just had like a rock and roll decadent time. Not with Holness, but just, with all the other contestants. They just ran amok in a hotel, going crazy, getting drunk. And they said they were bringing it back, but for like people of all ages, like anyone could apply. And I remember thinking, this will be great. I'll just go into Manchester where they film it, and I'll just run amok in the hotel with all the other cool quiz show contestants. And obviously when I got there, I was like 22 or whatever, and then everyone else was sort of 60 plus. And it was very hard to get them to get drunk in the bar or get off with them. It wasn't as exciting as
did Aspel. Did Aspel come to the bar?
I never saw Aspel at the bar. No, he kept a distance, to remain aloof.
He's. I wonder what's happened to Michael last week. He's just got too old, I guess, has he?
Didn't keep in touch with him. I didn't stay in touch. I got three questions right. It was pathetic. It was a shameful appearance.
He started well. I thought he's going to win. Started and then well. That was pretty much it. You went to two girls.
Right. Yeah, girls are smart as well, Richard. You can win contests.
There's two of them. It's not a fair contest.
It's not a fair fight. Yeah.
You didn't get a gold run. My friend Ben Moore got 5 gold runs on the original with Bob Holness. He went to America and met Mr. T.
Was that his prize?
Well, I think he went to Universal Studios and met Mr. T in Universal Studios.
Working there.
I think so. Yeah. I imagine he was properly working there. Oh, it's been going on a long time, hasn't it? You're tired? I'm tired. We're going to press on, though.
You seemed a lot more respectful to Simon.
I was. He's in Star Trek. You're in the fucking Tooth Fairy. Shut up. You're not even the main Tooth Fairy. If you were the main Tooth Fairy...
I was a friend of the Tooth Fairy.
I would take you more seriously.
Sure.
I enjoyed the Tooth Fairy.
Yeah.
Why
are you watching the Tooth Fairy? It's for kids. You're a creepy man, aren't you? You really are.
I'm a big fan of what...
Has anyone seen this wife of yours?
You're in movie 43, which I haven't seen.
That's not a good film. But again, Simon was saying, you do things because they're sort of fun for yourself, like, as opposed to... I mean, Peter Farrelly of the Farrelly Brothers phoned me up and he said, do you want to do a film? Do you want to do a sketch? It'll take 2 days. Do you want to do a sketch where you're in it on a date with Halle Berry? Well, I mean, I said yes before he'd finished Halle. I was like, how? And I knew it was going to be, and boom. And obviously, and so I went there, and it was great. And I stared at her. I worked with her for 2 days, and it was great fun, and I had a blast, you know. Yeah. And I didn't know that it was going to be in this weird film with loads of weird sketches.
I'm trying to remember what it was now, just reminding me something about that film, that they were really trying to get someone big in it, and then they...
talking about there's hordes. There was, like, Hugh Jackman was in it, and Richard Gere was in it, and Kate Winslet.
Richard Gere in it by agreeing to film this... move the studio across America.
I don't know.
They spent a lot of money on it.
But it was over 2 years, and they were just... I mean, I didn't know what it was. They just said, do a sketch. I was like, yeah, sure, that would be fun. Yeah.
I'm not blaming you. It's not like you've done a Barclaycard advert or whatever, Barclays advert. God, the audience hate me now. I tell you, I've really lost them. I'm going to ask you some more serious questions about comedy now.
Oh, okay.
I can be respectful and slightly disrespectful at the same time. I really loved the first series of Extras... like more than The Office.
Right, okay.
Why did you choose to... it felt like the second series was a different sitcom.
Yeah.
It felt like you could have just started with something completely different because it wasn't any more about extras.
Right.
Because they all became successful.
Right.
It felt to me there was a lot more mileage still...
Yeah.
...in having them as having them as sort of failures, but then they all became sort of successful.
Well, it just seemed like it was sort of interesting to explore the idea of, like, someone who's been struggling up the chain, and then he gets up the chain, and then seeing what happens to him once he gets there, and kind of how he's corrupted by it, and that just seemed interesting. I mean, I apologise if you didn't enjoy it, but at the time it seemed interesting. You know,
wrecked it for me.
Yeah.
Well, also I kind of thought about. There's really, really fun. I think in the first series of Extras, there's 3 bits in it that made me cry. Cry laughing, like I thought I was not going to be able to stop laughing, and I was going to die.
Sure.
There's things like, I mean, the things that when you get the celebrities, Patrick Stewart being and people being rude and stuff, is very, very good. But it seemed to me that the guy, that Andy Millman, he I don't know, he had to change the whole emphasis of everything because the guy who had one line in the bill had to then become the world's most successful actor again, so that he still beat him.
Right.
It seemed to me that if you wrote a sitcom for the BBC, that the thing they would do is say, you can't be in it, not that we're going to change the whole thing.
Well, I think the idea was more that that they liked it, but that kind of through the process they slowly kind of chipped away at what his idea was.
Yeah.
And it was kind of be careful what you wish for was the sort of theme of it. Again, I can only apologise for disappointing you so much. But I would say
at this point that I'm just kind of interested in the process of it because it felt like you could take those characters on as failures.
Yeah.
For longer.
Yeah, you could. But I mean, we didn't.
No.
But it's more than that. It's simply that, you know, we... when we're writing, we would just, I guess we were just, we wanted to give ourselves something different. Like, it just seemed to do it again was to sort of do it again, and that somehow we could change it a bit, maybe, and that would be interesting. And, you know, I apologise, but...
You made a bad mistake.
Well, sure, but...
I'm joking, fuck off, what's wrong with you people? I'm just kind of interested.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll send all scripts in future to you beforehand.
Did you hear about my idea about Simon Pegg? I could do one Simon Pegg, square peg in a round hole.
Yeah. I've always wanted to do one called Merchant's Navy, where I have a navy. That's it. I haven't come up with the rest. But feel free to fill in the blanks. But don't fuck it up on Series 2.
If you had to choose... You had to choose between having a tit that dispensed talcum powder and a finger that could travel through time. Yeah. You can have one of those things.
Yeah.
If you have any questions about what they would be, do feel free to join. The tit is like a breast.
Yeah.
You squeeze it and talcum powder comes out. Now think of that.
But I don't really use talcum powder, right?
You could share the talcum powder with the poor children.
Right.
Though if you saw like a lady changing a nappy,
is that what they need? Poor children, talcum powder.
It's one of the things they need.
Yeah, they're not washing. Presumably, these poor children, these orphans.
They could sell the talcum powder and for basic provisions, or the finger could travel through time and can do touch stuff.
But I can't see where it is.
No, you can look. I reckon you can look. I haven't thought that. Like, go in there and you can look.
I can peer through hole.
Yeah. And you'd be able to say, right, finger, you know, Berlin, 1945. Oh, my eye. My eye.
And why am I going to Berlin 1945 when the war has ended? See, it's like, I just want to see the rubble.
That's
a very specific moment.
There's not much you can do, but you can just, you know, go, hey, Hitler.
And I can give Hitler the finger, or I can just beckon to people, to Goebbels, to come closer, and then poke him in the eye.
I mean, it's clearly better than the talcum powder full of
tit. Clearly, I mean, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, but it's still an interesting question.
It's not, though, is it, really?
Because... Don't come here criticising my questions. I've worked very hard on these questions. How dare you say they're not good?
Oh, I like your second series of questions more.
I really like the second series
of questions. Fuck off! That's the one with the David Bowie song. That's a funny... That's a funny song. All right.
Self-indulgent.
Self-in-fucking-indulgent? Jesus Christ! How long have we been...
The end of the series. I can't leave it on this. You know, you've been so nice, and we had so much fun, and I feel I've spoiled the I've got overexcited and tired at the end. I've spoiled the whole day with my serious questions. If I'd just stuck to, you know, suckling cows. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
Are you sure?
No one's ever seen a ghost. People think they've seen ghosts, but they were mistaken. Sorry to ruin it for you guys. I used to do this radio show on the BBC World Service, all the glamorous jobs, and there was a man once, they brought him in to interview him, and he had invented a machine that could tell you if ghosts had been in the room. And everyone on the show took it completely seriously, 100% serious, and he had this machine, and it was like homemade, and it had two lights on it, green and red. And he would leave it in the studio overnight, and then the next morning we interviewed him on the show. And I said, "How does the so what happens?" He said, "If there's a ghost, if there's been any ghostly presence, then the green light will light up." Green light lit up, obviously. And I went, "How did that work?" And he said, "Well, if there's a ghost, it lights up." I know. I said, "I understand that." But how? He went, "Well, a ghost coming." I went, "I know. I understand." And obviously, he never satisfactorily explained. And I said, "So you, this doesn't prove ghosts, does it? It just proves you've made a box that can light up." And he went, "Well, here's proof. I was in bed, and a ghost appeared at the end of my bed, and he said, I'm a sea captain from this ship, and it sank in 18... da da da. And I went to the library, and I looked it up, and it had. And everyone went, ooh. And I went, okay, thanks for that. And you can, that's it. You can argue with someone's claim that they've seen a ghost.
Yeah, that's pretty good evidence.
That's solid evidence. But
did he ever take the box into a room and the green light didn't come on?
Never. There's always a ghost. There's always a ghost.
It's not a very useful thing. All right, look, Oliver Tribe, who's from Wales, I'm guessing, has asked you a question.
Yeah.
This will be a bit nicer than the questions I've been asking. How did you feel when you won your BAFTAs? Which is something I'd quite like to know, because it's probably not going to happen to me. I don't know if they do BAFTAs for cock jokes yet.
It was good. Yeah. It was nice. It was fun. Yeah, it was nice. It was good. I do it all for awards. That's the whole reason. So that was very satisfying.
But was there a downside to it?
Not winning them for extras.
No. Or do you not Series 2? Series 1 must have won a few.
I think Ricky won. Ricky won as an actor, and he wasn't in town, and I had to collect it for him, having also been nominated. And I didn't realise, and I was at the BAFTAs, and they went, the nominees are Steve Merchant, Ricky Gervais, whoever else. And the winner is Ricky Gervais. Coming to the stage to collect it, Steve Merchant. I was like, no one had checked this with me, and I had to go up there and kind of give an impromptu speech and not seem angry or bitter. It was very bizarre.
Yeah. I once had that with Stuart, one of Chortle. It's on a different level, much higher. Chortle Awards, and he couldn't go, and he made me go up and get it. And yeah. I'd never won. I've never accepted an award because I have then won some Chortle Awards. Don't get jealous. But I've never been around to collect them. So the only award I've ever collected is an award for Stuart Lee being the best stand-up. That's why I've turned out like I have. It's terrible. But, you know, you must know a bit what it's like, you know, having actually less funnier but much more successful comedy partner who everyone lauds.
In that comment, you're trying to get me to agree to badmouth both Stuart Lee and Ricky Gervais. Yeah. I'm not biting, mate.
Do you think you're better at comedy than Ricky Gervais?
No.
Wow. Then how can we trust your judgment on anything? It's been mainly fun, right? We've mainly had a good time.
It's been like Parkinson. If Parkinson had Parkinson's and was just mean.
Have you ever seen a tooth fairy in real life?
No!
Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Merchant. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Stephen Merchant. The music was by Pest. Thanks to Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide and all the staff at the Leicester Square Theatre for letting us come and do our show here. And Chris Evans, not that one. No, not the one from the Avengers. No, not that bloke from work, you know. He's from Wales. That probably doesn't narrow it down. It was produced by Ben Walker. It's a Fuzz, Go Faster, Stripe and Sky Potato production. Hooray! Thank you for listening to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. That's the end of the series, but that wasn't bad, was it? If you've enjoyed them and you'd want to give us some money, why not go to gofasterstripe.com and buy them all on video? There's 8 of them you can get for just £15. And there's Series 3 as well. You can pick up all those for £15 as well. Or just go to gofasterstripe.com and you can buy one of my DVDs. Oh, by the way, if you're interested in knowing what that song was called, it was by Pest. It's Try Again from the album All Out Fallout. That's one of my favourite albums. They don't need to try again. It was good as it was, wasn't it? Producer Ben also says that he has produced two other podcasts called Do the Right Thing and Pappy's Flatshare Slamdown Christmas Special, which you get from iTunes and the British Comedy Guide for free. So go and they're very funny. Check those out. If you want to come and see me on tour, we're all going to die. All the tour dates to come are at richherring.com/WAGTD. Would love to see you there. And if not, just tell your friends about this. We're doing some more of these, I think, in February or something. I don't know. I'm not that far ahead. And there'll be more fantastic guests. Please support us if you can, and we can keep going. If you don't, we'll just stop doing it. It's all right, isn't it? No skin off my nose. Fuck you. All right, bye!
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.